DW Africa Link.
And a warm welcome to today's program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We would also like to welcome those of you following us on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and on our partner radio stations.
Coming up on the program, mixed reactions after Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is declared winner against ex-rival Atiku Abubakar.
Actually, I feel highly delighted. I believe in him, and he's somebody who has integrity.
Yeah, I think PDP should be on top. For me, I'm not happy.
I'm really not bothered, seriously, because they don't know me, I don't know them.
Buhari won the vote with 56%, while Atiku Abubakar garnered 41%. He has vowed to go to court.
Plus, a DW investigation shows that German weapons are being used by militia groups in Yemen's civil war.
Stay with us until the end for details, but first, here's a chance to listen to other stories making headlines around the world.
DW News.
I'm Eunice Wanjiro with DW News. In Nigeria, Muhammadu Buhari has defended his sweeping win of a second term as free and fair. The country's electoral commission formally declared the result early this morning, showing a comfortable victory for the incumbent. His main rival, Buhari's main rival, opposition leader Atiku Abubakar, says the election was rigged and plans to challenge the result in court. Buhari had this to say to his supporters.
I would like to make as official appeal to my supporters not to gloat or humiliate the opposition. Victory is enough reward for your efforts.
Pakistan's military said on Wednesday that it shot down two Indian warplanes after they crossed into Pakistani airspace and captured one of the pilots. This latest crisis between the nuclear-armed neighbours comes after Pakistan-based militants killed dozens of Indian security personnel in the disputed territory of Kashmir. Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan has urged restraint after meeting with his top security officials.
Can we afford miscalculation with the kinds of weapons you and we have? Shouldn't we be thinking where this will go from here if things were to escalate? It won't even be in my control or in Narendra Modi's control.
EU diplomatic chief Federica Mogherini on Wednesday called on India and Pakistan to show the utmost restraint in their escalating confrontation. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The second summit between US President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is underway in the Vietnamese capital, Hanoi. The two met for a short time on Wednesday evening. More lengthy talks are set for the morning. Trump wants to push Kim to give up his nuclear weapons program in exchange for economic development. The talks come 8 months after a historic summit in Singapore, the first between two sitting US president and a North Korean leader. British Prime Minister Theresa May has gained appeal to lawmakers to support her plan to take the United Kingdom out of the European Union. May addressed Brexit ahead of a series of votes set for later today. They won't directly determine the fate of her deal, but could influence her next steps as she tries to win support from the parliament. Officials in Egypt said at least 25 people were killed when a locomotive crashed into a barrier at the Egyptian capital's main train station on Wednesday, causing its fuel tank to explode and triggering a huge fire. Railway officials said the single rail car was travelling too fast when it collided head-on with the barrier. At least 47 people were also injured, many of them critically, and officials added that the death toll could rise. For more news and information, visit our website, that's dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
And this is DW's African program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. A warm welcome to those of you listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Chi Sylvester says he's watching from South Africa, and Emil Touré says all the way from Italy. Thank you.
Many thanks indeed for that, Zippy. Now, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has said that it is obvious that elections were free and fair as his top opposition challenger vows to contest the results in court.
Buhari spoke during an electoral commission ceremony confirming his victory, which he secured with 55% of the vote.
DW's correspondents in different parts of the country went out to find out people's reactions. But before we get to the reactions, let's listen to their short reports.
I'm Samuel Lukwa in Lagos, Nigeria's commercial capital. With the presidential election over and the results declared, Lagos is now returning to its old self. Activities slowed down just before the elections amidst fears that there may be violence. Some people even traveled out of the city, while others simply preferred to stay indoors. Now economic activities have picked up and the roads are now congested again. Many people are simply going about their usual business, not minding who won the election. For them, life is not likely to change much, irrespective of who the winner is. But as the state with the highest number of voters, Lagos has a large share of partisan people. While President Buhari, who won the election, has considerable support among the ordinary people, his closest rival, Atiku Abubakar, enjoys a lot of support from the educated people. Soon, everyone will forget their political differences and face the common challenge of such things like bad road, insecurity, poor electricity, and water supply.
From northern Nigeria, Muhammad Al-Amin reports that in Maiduguri, Borno State capital, residents have been celebrating President Muhammadu Buhari's victory at the poll for a second term. Many young and elderly who were seen in some locations spent the night outside their homes waiting for the declaration despite existing curfew in Maiduguri. Buhari's fans trooped to the street, jubilating and singing victory songs as soon as he was declared winner in the early hours of the day. Some of the residents I talked to expressed optimism that Buhari will continue with the development projects he started, describing the re-election as an act of God. Buhari, according to them, has demonstrated greater commitment to the defeat of Boko Haram insurgents, resettlement of displaced communities, and restoration of peace in the region.
Muhammad Bello is my name in the Niger Delta region. The people of the Niger Delta and the Southeast have not been left behind in showing their reactions from the outcome of election results. However, it is on record that the two regions have for a very long time been a People's Democratic Party dominated areas when it comes to politics and elections. Some didn't care at all which way the election goes, while others feel they have been cheated of a well-deserved victory. On the other hand, some Biafra agitators claim that their votes were not counted.
Many thanks to our correspondents in Lagos, Maiduguri, and the southwestern region of Niger Delta State.
And here are some reactions from ordinary Nigerians that our correspondents spoke to.
The result is okay. That has been the normal way Nigerian election used to go. And it's just because the opponent does not have a strong contender with good reputation.
Well, what I know, my complaint cannot bring any change and any impact on it. There's no need to complain. Just, if you cannot beat them, join them.
Actually, I feel highly delighted. I believe in him, and he's somebody who has integrity, courageous, somebody who is good in managing resources. You know, we have moved forward. There are so many achievements to mention but a few of this present administration. So we hope by the next level, things will double, will even in geometric progression will increase.
I've been praying for him. I've been praying so that he will succeed in the election, and alhamdulillah, everything is went okay. He did so much. So this time around, I'm sure he said next level, so Nigeria will totally change. Inshallah.
I don't have much to say, just to give thanks to God that Buhari won back. And my advice to him to put his best, those things that he has not been doing, that he should start putting them to practice to help the Nigerians.
I don't think the way they are running the election is a better way. Seriously, because if it should be the normal way, seriously, I think PDP should be on top. But what we are seeing, and based on the result we had, for me, I'm not happy.
I'm really not bothered, seriously. I don't know, because they don't know me, I don't know them. Yes, I'm in this country, I'm a Nigerian, yes, but the point is, whoever sits there, we should have a massive change. People shouldn't be complaining and saying this person should go, Buhari should go, Buhari should go. So people should find out, why do you want Buhari to go?
Zippy, I like that last comment from lady. She says she doesn't know them and they don't know her. Now, last evening I was talking to a friend, he's Nigerian, and I asked him whether he would vote if he was in Nigeria. His name is Ikechukwu Clement, and he normally listens to our show. And he said, well, if the government paid social benefits to the unemployed, then he would go and vote. But since they don't, he wouldn't be bothered like that lady.
But I thought democracy was that everyone should have a say and vote. If you say we don't vote, who will vote now?
Anyway, from our social media desk, many of you have been commenting on Buhari's win and are not happy about the results. Jeff Onkwi says, empty streets here, this show the majority of people, even in the Buhari strongholds, are not happy for his win.
And Gozi Obi, who is listening to us live now, says, I am shocked to the fact that Mr. Integrity is so proud to have won an election through back doors.
Lamini Kamara says, congratulations to Baba Buhari. Anyway, we will come back to your comments whenever we can. Now, to Yemen and the weapons used to wage war there. The four-year conflict has created the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The German government has repeatedly denied any knowledge of German arms and technology involved in the war.
But an exclusive investigation by a team of media outlets, including DW News, suggests those weapons are being used in Yemen. In the following report by Naomi Conrad, Germany's economy minister Peter Altmaier says he's not aware of any arms deal between Germany and Saudi Arabia.
In Yemen's brutal war, it's the civilians who are bearing the brunt. Thousands have died, millions on the brink of starvation. Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are both fighting in Yemen, and it's here, at this arms fair in Abu Dhabi, that they're shopping for the latest lethal technology. Both are among the German arms industry's top clients, but Berlin has repeatedly denied any knowledge of German-made arms employed in Yemen.
I'm not aware of it. We have in our coalition agreement let down some very restrictive rules for further export of military weapons to parties immediately and directly involved in the German conflict. This is now being implemented. I have not had any news about it so far.
Germany prides itself on these strict arms export guidelines, which ban the sale of weapons to countries involved in armed conflict. But DW and its investigative partners report München Stern magazine, Lighthouse Reports and Bellingcat trawled loads of videos, photos and satellite images and found evidence that German weapons sold to the Emirates and Saudi Arabia are in fact being used in the Yemen war, in the air, at sea and on land.
Naomi Conrad with that report. Now we go back to our top story. There have been mixed reactions from after Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari was declared winner against his arch-rival businessman Atiku Abubakar. Buhari won the vote with 56%, while Atiku Abubakar garnered 41. He has vowed to go to court to challenge the result.
And I like the question here from Olua Hurumonya. Is it only in Kaduna that they are celebrating the results?
And Rome says, okay, DW, go to the southern region and show us the reactions of people over there. When someone wins the election and the majority of citizens are angry, then you get to know what that means. I mean, it's a divided vote in Nigeria as usual.
Yeah, I like the effect we see online and what you see on the videos of people celebrating. It's such a mix, Isaac.
Exactly. And in some urban states, you know, like Lagos, you know, we heard of reports, armed gangs destroying material. You know, we had our own Adrian Krish. And like you read that comment from Olua, it says, it is only in Kaduna that they celebrate. One of our correspondents, Zahradin Omar, he did a great job with, you know, videos on Facebook and all that.
Yeah, so that is quite a mixture. I think Atiku Abubakar clearly had also a lot of supporters. And I like what Choco Brown here is saying, that few weeks from now, you start giving news on Fulani headsman, who did they kill, North and West?
I mean, always Nigerian elections are always divisive. And this time round, the two of the candidates are from the North. And I think that's why, you know, in the South, there was little interest, you know, to the ballots, you know, and some people stayed away anyway, especially the women.
Do you mean that could have had an impact on the results?
Well, we have articles on our page, that is dw.com/Africa. One of it is an opinion from our own Thomas Mosh. It says, bad losers, bad winners. Another one is about the takeaways from elections in Nigeria and Senegal. And if you want to know more information about this election, just go, as I said, to our page, dw.com/Africa. You can also keep on the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Welcome back to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. A big thank you to all those listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Our big story of the day: mixed reactions after Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is declared winner against arch rival Atiku Abubakar. We shall come to your comments whenever we can.
But we have a lot coming up in the next 15 minutes. Germany prepares to return two very important artifacts from its colonial era to Namibia.
And there could be genuine reservation about the intention and the scope of this whole exercise. But I think, to the best of my knowledge, the government is maintaining an open door.
Well, the official handover of these artifacts to the National Archives is tomorrow, Thursday.
But before all that, we hear about the growing Israel-Africa relations. Israel has openly been seeking closer ties with Africa. Just a few years ago, President Benjamin Netanyahu became the first Israeli premier in nearly three decades to visit the continent.
Now, Liberian President George Weah is in Israel for a four-day visit, where he's scheduled to meet the president, Reverend Rivlin, and Prime Minister Netanyahu. Weah is also expected to seek development engagements from Israel. As Clarissa Hammond reports, this also shows the growing Israeli-Africa ties.
Israel-Africa relations have been grabbing the headlines since Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to Chad last month. Last week, he said he plans to hold talks with leaders from Mali and Niger on potential diplomatic relations, according to media reports from the Times of Israel. Although there is no official statement on this, there have been lingering questions on what this new Israel-African relations means. What's striking is that the three states are mostly Muslim. Matthias Basedow, director of the Giga Institute for African Studies, says, unlike in the Middle East, anti-Semitism is not as pronounced in African Muslim countries.
There is no classic pronounced anti-Semitism in many sub-Saharan African Muslim countries. Therefore, the government should not have any difficulties explaining to its people this rapprochement. In addition, the relationship between Israel and Sunni Muslim has relaxed. Because Saudi Arabia is currently very much at odds with Iran, so does the principle, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Political scientist Germain Hervé Mbia-Yebega from the Afrique Monde Institute in Côte d'Ivoire says the current warming up of relations has been a process that started in the early 1980s with a peace agreement with Egypt.
The official breaking of ties in the 1970s between Israel and some African countries did not hinder cooperation. It continued in agriculture, medicine, and the economy in general.
2 years ago, Netanyahu described Israel's push in Africa as a priority. Basedow believes it's seeking to gain more recognition after years of diplomatic isolation.
For Netanyahu, it is also about scoring points before the elections and show that he's diplomatically advancing the international relations of his country.
But could there be more motives? Eli Carmon, a political scientist at the International Institute of Counterterrorism in Jerusalem, explains.
Israel has two goals. First of all, one is political, because Arab countries represent quite a big bloc, United Nations. And also on the economic level, Israel needs to export.
Whatever the case, experts like Yebega believe African states could benefit from closer cooperation with Israel because they face demographic challenges and seek support for sustainable development.
Clarissa Herrmann with that report. And you have already been giving us your feedback on that. Edwin Gang is saying stop selling African arms and war weapons to kill each other. Liberia needs infrastructural, agricultural and technological development.
And Bashir Kabaitilaki says strengthening diplomacy is also important.
And we have Raymond Mensah, who is saying, please, no guns. Teach your people how to feed themselves.
Thanks for those comments.
On the spot.
Now, Namibia has got back two important artifacts from Germany dating back to the colonial era. The artifacts were returned home after 120 years.
President Hage-Geingob received the Bible and the whip of the late national hero Hendrik Witbooi at a state ceremony. The two artifacts have been on display at the Linden Museum in Stuttgart until now. This report by Daniel Pels is now presented by Assumpta Latus.
Namibia is gearing up to receive the artifacts which were stolen by German soldiers during an attack on Witbooi's stronghold of Hoornkrans in 1893. Namibia has been asking for the return of the Bible and the whip for years. During the colonial times, the so-called Chief Hendrik Witbooi was an important leader of the Nama people, and the whip is important for this history. Sandra Ferrakuti, a curator at a museum, says returning the artifacts is important for Germany.
Symbolic is the shown wichtig.
Symbolically, it is very important because Captain Witbooi was a national figure for Namibia. With the return, we are taking an important step in the process of reconciliation and close dialogue with different stakeholders on the ground.
Chief in this project and dialogue.
Namibia's government wants the Bible and the whip to be exhibited in the National Archives until a museum is built in Witbooi's hometown of Gideon. However, not all Nama people agree with that. The Nama Traditional Leaders Association, NTLA, even wanted to legally stop the restitution. The association's General Secretary Lazarus Kairabep says the artifacts should have been given to the church or the family. Kairabep believes too little information on the past history is also to blame.
That history has been suffocated for so long, and with the discussion in Namibia going on about that history, why it's neglected. It seems as if Namibia does not have a policy or a philosophy around how to deal with this history.
The return of the Witbooi artifacts has also led to disputes between major ethnic groups, the Herero and the Nama. When human bones from the colonial era were returned to Namibia last year, some of the representatives of both ethnic groups present were already furious. They strongly demanded to be involved in the negotiations and criticized the German conduct. According to observers in Namibia, the Witbooi's family is also divided on this issue. Namibia's government refutes the accusation that it does not take the wishes of the Herero seriously, as Speaker Peter Kadjaviv explains.
There could be genuine reservation about the intention and the scope of this whole exercise. But I think, to the best of my knowledge, the government is maintaining an open door. In other words, other Namibians who are not part of these particular negotiations should be persuaded to join in, because at the end of the day, this is not intended to benefit only a few people.
Just recently, the German Development Minister Gerd Müller was positive that Namibia and Germany will agree on the repatriation by the end of the year. Until that happens, the dispute is likely to continue.
That report was compiled by Daniel Pelz.
Now, more to that story, go to our page, dw.com/Africa. And just to remind you, these artifacts for 120 years were at a museum in Stuttgart. They will return to Namibia, and the official ceremony or handover will be tomorrow, the 28th of February.
Living Planet Africa.
In Africa, unpredictable weather and climate change are often a challenge, not just for farmers, but for people who sell or distribute agricultural products.
In Uganda, weather experts say although weather and climate information is available, the main problem is that it does not reach the targeted communities. Our correspondent Sophie Mbogwa found out the challenge. Here is her report.
Along the busy Entebbe Kampala Road, Nabasi Ramele, a 32-year-old mother of five, hoists an umbrella to shield her vegetables from the scorching sun. She sells vegetables outside a tiny container by the roadside. Although her business is thriving at the moment, she knows this could be short-lived due to the approaching rainy season.
When it comes with flooding, it takes away all your things. I lost a lot of money. That's why when you can see my capital, I don't want to invest in much money. Like last year, I lost it was 1.5 in that small business. The other year it was more than that in 2017. So that's why I even lost morale. Now I'm remaining like with a capital of only 500,000. That information can help us to get prepared before, not to put in much man of hours.
It's not just vegetable vendors who are affected by the lack of information on weather patterns. Farmers require this data in their day-to-day decisions, like when to plant, harvest, use pest control or irrigation. Though experts believe there is no shortage of weather and climate information in the region, the main challenge is its dissemination. The Uganda National Meteorological Authority has now come up with different ways to reach farmers and vendors like Millie so that they can make informed decisions. Here is the Director of Training and Research, Teddy Tindamanyiri.
We have almost daily forecasts, which are forecast on radios. We have even gone further to interpret it in different local languages. We also have the TV programs, every end of news. The challenge we have is that the targeting of the people who are most vulnerable needs to be reworked out, because those are people who may not have radios, they are people who may not have TVs. Therefore, there is that need for us to really look at innovative ways of reaching them.
According to Richard Muita from the Kenya Meteorological Department, this problem is not exclusive to Uganda, but many African countries who lack capacity to produce and disseminate information on weather and climate.
Users require information that is addressing their specific needs and at their level. There are quite many countries in Africa which still do not have the capacity to run like a complete national meteorological service, which can provide the diverse needs of different users in their specific countries. Some countries still do not have like observation networks, and therefore they cannot like provide sufficient effective climate information services to diverse users.
The Weather and Climate Information Services for Africa, WISER, has been working with regional meteorological departments to produce information based on user demands. East African coordinator John Mungai explains how they are doing it.
We are trying to bring together producers of information. This is a Met department, together with the users of information. They could be farmers, they could be any sector that uses weather and climate information. And then we co-develop services with them. We sit down together and we agree on which services are likely going to be needed by the farmers or any other group. And then we co-design that, and the Met services produce this kind of information.
That is John Mungai from the Weather and Climate Information Services in East Africa. That report was compiled by Sophia Mbogua.
Now, back to our top story. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has been declared winner against archrival Atiku Abubakar. Buhari won the vote with 56%, while Atiku Abubakar garnered 41%. He has vowed to go to court.
And there's a comment on that action itself, planning to go to court, from Onua Fili, who says, how many years do you think cases last in Nigerian court? And he goes on to say, as long as the incumbent president wants, the case can last for 4 years. This is why Igbos want a new country. He says, Nigeria has expired.
Okay, that's his comment. Lens James says, Nigeria witnessed the most dubious election in its history.
And there is Liberty Abo, who is saying that is a fact. The election was massively rigged by the empire.
Now, for those who may not know Muhammadu Buhari, he's a former military dictator who briefly seized power in the 80s and now says he regrets his ruthless past.
Yeah, but I like what he has said. He's now focusing on the future and he wants to build the country, boost economy, security. The same promises, we would say, Isaac.
And of course, he defended his sweeping win of a second term as free and fair and appealed to common love of a country. That's his quote. I quote him as his top challenger, Atiku, vowed to go to court. I mean, some people have got back to life, like, you know, we heard from Lagos.
Yeah, for sure. Some have moved on. Some are still bitter.
The streets are bustling with activity once again. But during voting day, they were empty.
That's the mix of politics and elections.
Anyway, for more on this story, just go to our webpage, dw.com/Africa, and keep up the debate on our page, DW Africa. With that, we come to the end of the show. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.